in general, unfortunately, the study reports that progress to gender equality stalled. So younger men rarely have more gender equitable attitudes than older men. And many men support equality in the abstract, but defend their privilege and the status quo in practice at home.
Hello there. Welcome to the episode number 2 of Mining the Gap, Conversations on Gender. I'm Karim Karaki and I'm the head of the Economic Recovery and Transformation Workstream in ECDPM, and I'll be your host for this episode. So today we are going to talk about the role of boys and men in supporting gender equality and some of the issues relating to masculinities. Too often, gender equality or actually rather gender inequality is perceived as a woman or girl's issue and in turn is treated as an issue that only women and girls can address. So too often we leave men and boys aside from these conversations. So, however, if men and boys are part of the problems, they are also part of the solution. So by acknowledging their power and privilege, they can act to shift the dominant norms and ideas about gender and masculinity and challenge also the patriarchal beliefs and the practices and structure that fuel inequality between men and women. This is not so easy or straightforward, otherwise we would have made a lot more progress in the past years. It's difficult because it also involves the issue of power relations between men and women, which we'll be talking about that during this episode. So in this context, the concept of masculinity has been increasingly discussed. But what is actually masculinity? I mean, the first time I heard about it was when people started talking about toxic masculinity at the workplace, with people, you know, promoting this behavior of being super competitive, a hard worker, and so on. But less people actually know about the concept itself of masculinity. And looking around, I mean, in the literature, it's defined as all the social expectations of being a man. So the roles and the behaviors and the attributes that are considered appropriate for boys, men in a given society. So masculinity is shaped both by the individuals themselves. So I decide to be that man with the acting this way and so on, but it's also very much shaped by institutions. So our laws, the economy, the religion, education and media. So it's a bit more complex, because at the end you have not only to understand men as they are, but in the broader context of society. And so why is it difficult to engage boys and men in the fight for gender equality? So to try and answer these questions, I'm together with Carla Pagano. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning, Karim, and thank you very much for having me today.
It's an honor to have you, Carla. Thanks very much for joining us. So you are a feminist international consultant in gender equality and human rights, with a master's in human and women's rights in Islam and a master's in studies of sexual difference. So you have over 20 years of experience in international programs involving the civil society, but also governments, delivering trainings on gender equality, with, if I understand well, also quite a focus on the Middle East and North African region, but that goes also, your experience go beyond this and includes also Latin America, but also Europe. And I think that in this context is very interesting, because when we talk about gender equality, we often think of, oh, that's a problem for, you know, other continents than Europe. But in fact, it's still a big issue here as well. So it would be also interesting to see these two facets throughout our discussion. So if I may, then I'll start maybe with the first kind of introductory question. Why do we talk about masculinities in plural form? I heard about masculinity. That's what I was talking about in the start of this episode. But what about masculinities? And what do we mean as well, maybe with toxic or, on the contrary, positive masculinity?
So when we speak about patriarchy, which literally means the law of the father, the autocratic rule by the father as the head of the family, we speak of a broad social system that manifests itself in both the public and the private spheres. In the public sphere, men hold power. political, economic, and representative power. And they do that through leadership, through moral authority, to the social privilege that they hold, and to control over private property. In the private sphere, patriarchy manifests itself through the authority of the male figures in the household, for example, or in the family, over the female ones. And then over the centuries, patriarchy has created fixed gender roles for men and for boys and for women and for girls, and has generated a bunch of gender stereotypes. So what are these gender stereotypes? Are clichés and generalizations about what men and boys and women and girls can or cannot do, or are not capable of doing. So we need to talk about masculinities to free all genders from what we call toxic masculinity, and to break gender stereotypes that relegate both men and women into rigid roles, stifling, you know, their individual freedom. And we need to talk about masculinities also to combat homophobia, human rights violations towards non-binary and queer subjectivities, and to transform these unequal gender power relations. So let's say that patriarchy created an idea of manliness that perpetuates gender inequalities, domination, control, homophobia, and gender-based violence. So this is what we call toxic masculinities. Toxic masculinities are characterized by toughness, intransigence, anti-femininity. What is this? It's what is considered, it's a stereotype, it's what is considered feminine, such as fragility, emotions, sweetness, sensitivity, vulnerability, which of course is not true, because women as a gender are not monolithic. Yeah, but there are various people in there. So toxic masculinities are, you know, manifest through an exercise of power to control and authority, and do not affect women only and non-binary subjectivities, but also men, because they repress men's instinct and freedom, and forces them into rigid performance roles that prevent their emotional and social growth. And I want to also say that since more than 20 years, models of positive masculinities have emerged, also thanks to the impulse of feminist movements all around the globe. So many men have taken the floor to overcome social expectations about their being or becoming this kind of men into these rigid roles. So to overcome these stereotypes that want them to be tough, authoritarian, bossy, incapable of doing it alone. Right? So positive masculinity is about being authentic, not using strength or power to the detriment of others, not to be ashamed of one's own emotions, to surrender to the male privilege, and to exhibit moral intelligence, to respect all human beings or people for whom they are and not for what society has relegated them to.
Nowadays, especially with the current also economic crisis that is present all over the world, we're talking about the poly crisis and so on, and we see that men alone are not enough to provide a decent income for their own families, and so they have to rely more and more on women to do that, which has not been so much of an easy process, because then it's all their idea of, you know, how to be a man that is being questioned. No, I mean this idea of toxic masculinity, you know. And there I was basically just wondering, You know, because at the end of the day, when we talk about gender equality, we are talking about power relations between men and women. And so is the question then about, you know, having men and boys sharing their power with women? And how is the reaction as well of men to this gradual loss of power when, you know, you see improvement in the position of women and girls in society?
Nowadays, men are not only the sole breadwinner in the house, right? Because the neoliberal economies that dominate the world impose a double salary or even more in a family, in a household. And differences between genders in this respect concern, I would say, more the quality and stability of work. Think that according to the International Labour Organization, globally, women spend twice as much or more time as men in unpaid work. Worldwide, women in average earn 2/3 of what men earn. And women make up the majority of the world's part-time workers, between 60% and 90%. Worldwide, and in the European Union, 83% of part-time workers are women. So the social reproduction work that women do benefits neoliberal economies that make profit from cheap labor or from unpaid labor, and benefit men who can maintain greater labor stability, also because they do not have to bear the burden of social reproduction. And on the one hand, traditional expectations of masculinity that are still very rooted in the majority of societies demand this toughness, strength, and rationality from men. While on the other hand, the modern men are expected to possess soft skills such as empathy, sensitivity. So these seemingly conflicting requests can have a negative impact on the development and behavior of boys and young men, which can even lead to aggression, low self-esteem, drug abuse, as well as to mental health disorders. So when identity, according to several studies, you know, identity only becomes an issue when it is in crisis. So we see that many men are changing their behaviors and are contributing to transform gender power relationships, and this is not an easy path, and we all need to support them. Nevertheless, there is an interesting study. We are at the second study, the International Men and Gender Equality Survey, called IMAGES. You find it easily in the internet. This second one was published last year in 2022, and it covers several countries across Arab states, Africa, Asia, Latin America, and also Europe. And one key finding is that much of the current generation of adults across the world is aware of their fathers or other men in the households dominating the important decisions of their lives. From a development perspective, memories of household domination by men can often normalize the idea that men's dominance and prominence are normal, are accepted, so that this is the way things should be. And gender traditionalism, according to this study, is alive and well, including support for maintaining inequitable gendered roles, men's domination in decision-making, and justification of violence against women. So we should bear in mind that gender roles are transmitted from a generation to another. And this study, IMAGES, reports links between, like, witnessing violence as a child and perpetrating intimate partner violence as an adult. At the same time, these attitudes vary substantially and point to opportunities to shift gender norms while for example, women and men who grew up seeing gender equality in their households as children hold more equitable attitudes when adults. The study reports that boys witnessing multiple and overlapping forms of violence during childhood, but also that men whose fathers were involved in caregiving are more involved themselves when adults. So in general, unfortunately, the study reports that progress to gender equality is stalled. So younger men rarely have more gender equitable attitudes than older men. And many men support equality in the abstract, but defend their privilege and the status quo in practice at home.
There are at least maybe two things or three that resonates in mine, at least on my side. The first one is, as you said, it's something that is like those values and behaviors are passed on from one generation to another. And I find it also not easy as myself being a son to sometimes oppose to my parents' model. So I think this demands quite some effort. And it's also about consciousness. So I think most boys and men may see gender equality as something positive. But in practice, I think what it means is still not very clear. And when it's about giving them power, then it gets very real for them. And then we do have also experienced some reaction. I mean, when like the first times that quotas were put in place in order to promote women in boards of companies, very often these quotas were used as an explanation for men about how that woman got into the position. Oh, it's thanks to the quota. It's not thanks to her competencies. So it's kind of, again, defensive attitude towards, you know, promoting gender equality related measures. I remember reading some very interesting reports about how a civil society organization was trying to promote women economic empowerment by essentially having them work, have a job, and provide then an income as well in the household. And the program was a complete success. A lot of women did provide income, and that had an impact on the household as a whole. But then when the evaluator looked at the unintended effect on women, one of them being the increase of domestic abuses at home, and they kind of make the link between the lack of involvement of men and boys at the start of the program and this unintended effect. So I maybe would like then to have a bit also your experience and also your knowledge on this issue of engaging boys and men in the fight for gender equality, to better understand how this can be done in practice. And maybe if you have some good practices as well to share, that would be very interesting.
Absolutely, there are many. And as you say, gender norms damage men too. And there is this really different, which is reported also in several studies. I'm thinking, for example, to the work of Ken Halland, Boys, Young Men and Violence, Masculinities, Education and Practice is the title of his book, published in 2015. He studied young men and boys in Northern Ireland and showed that men experience ambivalence about their public and private persona. So it's exactly what you were saying before. So in public, there is great pressure to appear confident and to display their masculinity in a forceful way. And there is fear of being humiliated as a result of appearing weak, while in private, young men face, on one hand, their anxieties and try to address their fears and emotions. They don't find answers often from, you know, their fathers or their mothers, because they were older generations and they might not have them. So they have little supports, and there are very few mechanisms available at their disposal. So gender norms really, damage men. And also, if you consider that also trans women often report being asked the same questions after the decision to transition. Why would you give up male privilege? Why descend the ladder of social worth? And these women are particularly vulnerable to violence for that reason. So, the fact that there is so little progress, and you consider that also you say women participate in some forms in patriarchal culture, they're not detached from it because it is pervasive, has existed for millennia in our societies, and needs awareness and for women to listen to their desires for freedom. So this is neither simple nor automatic. There are a lot of good examples, one that comes to my mind is an example of an organization working in Tunisia and providing support to women collecting clams in the sea. So this is a work that women do, is very badly paid, very precarious, and part-time. And often, these women have a lot of health issues because they work with their feet and hands in the cold water all the time. So they don't have equipment. And this organization was giving them this equipment, to protect them. Their the husbands of those women, of the majority of them, stopped working as fishermen, saying, okay, now, since you get support, so you can provide yourself for the family, because you don't need me anymore. And then through discussion with the organization, we understood that, no, you cannot exclude men from this aid. So while you provide aid to women, you should provide also kind of support to men to avoid this kind of, reaction, which is, the product, it's not just only because they are bad people, it's because they are the product of this patriarchal culture that makes them feeling humiliated if, they cannot be the sole providers of support to the family. So you need to, And besides this, there are many more things that we can do. For example, we can adhere to campaigns. This Next Gen Men campaign is Next Gen Men is a Canadian nonprofit whose work is dedicated to change the world and acts and things about masculinities and to bring about chances for young men to identify themselves with positive masculinities. There is a huge worldwide campaign run by UN Women, is the He for She campaign, which also received a little bit of criticism from feminists because, it puts forward this, good men against the bad men, because it brings together men champions, championing for gender equality. But, also on that we have good experience from Jordan, for example, where, it attracted a lot of young people and created also safe spaces for them to talk between men and then also with girls, with women, because mixing is also always an issue in some parts of the world. Or I'm thinking to on a community level to a program in Kenya, the Africa Alliance of YMCA, which is part of a larger project that is called hashtag Sex Manenoz, with Z, final Z, which aims to cultivate positive masculinity in both Kenya and Zambia. and thus created what they call a power space, which is a place where young men, again, can express themselves and gain knowledge on different kind of very difficult topics, such as violence against women, contraception, sexual and reproductive health and rights, and female genital mutilation. And there is also another interesting campaign. It's a public campaign run, which was launched last July by the mayor of London, which aims at empowering men to challenge misogyny by saying mate like this to their mates when they cross the line, you know, because they're being misogynistic. So the campaign, it's interesting because it's the result of a study that was conducted in the UK to understand what stops men from intervening when they hear sexist or misogynistic language. And the study found out that 2 in 3 men want to intervene when they hear this misogynistic language, but they didn't know what to say. So simply this campaign, you know, created this word saying, mate, hey, like, what are you doing? Right, stop it, yeah? So, and, you know, it's a simple way to give, you know, these people a tool, you know. Yeah, and then concerning, for example, economic empowerment, besides the example that I made about Tunisia, there is another, you know, example that is running since years, and these journeys of transformation or engaging men as allies in women's economic empowerment. This is a program that follows the gender transformative approaches for food security, improved nutrition, and sustainable agriculture. It's a methodology which was developed in 2011 by the FAO with Care International and the Rwanda Men's Resource Center, which works on to engage men in gender equality and prevention. So this gender transformative curricula designed was designed to challenge inequitable gender norms and power dynamics, including guarding the ability of women to fully participate and benefit from economic opportunities. So they basically promote shared household decision-making, addressing unpaid care work, and promote men's caregiving, and of course, prevent intimate partner violence. So they use, you know, these food security programs also to introduce other issues towards gender equality.
Thanks very much, Carla. It's very interesting to see also all those examples that are not taking place only, you know, in the African continent or the MENA region, but also in Europe, because there's also a lot of progress on our end to do in this issue. Given your background and your experience in the MENA region, I would like maybe to ask a quick question then on maybe the role of Islam as well in gender equality that has been discussed in the media in Europe, but sometimes maybe with some sort of bias and misunderstanding about, you know, the religion itself, but also its influence in the MENA region. So there, I would like to have maybe your views and your experience working there to better understand, you know, how. Like, what's the role of Islam basically in gender equality? If it can actually be conducive to gender equality, which would be quite a different narrative than the one that we often hear about in the media.
Thank you for the challenging question. Look, in general, Islam is a religion that calls for gender equality, although. There are some issues like the inheritance, for example, where women inherit the half of the male in the family, that still poses questions. And, you know, these redistributive norms are also to be thought in a situation when Islam was born, you know, when, you know, there were social settings and which makes like women going to the male's family where she will benefit of, you know, the inheritance that the male of that family have inherited, you know. So this is a distributive system that, of course, nowadays poses problems. Huh? Also because, let me say that religion is very often instrumentalized, right? Not only Islam, all religions are instrumentalized for other purposes. So that's why there are discussions today in several Islamic countries on this subject, but also because, you know, gender norms and male domination in many families is such that, you know, women do not even inherit the half of their part, because simply their brothers and their fathers convince them not to ask, not to claim their share, you see. So, of course, there are many interesting work being done by Islamic feminists that are deeply studying into the Hawadith. You know, the Hadith is these sayings of the Prophet that are part of the Sunnah, which is the Sunnah is the, let's say, it's the moral and the law together. It's the way in which Islam rules as a religion and also as part of the political, the legal life, you know. And then the Hadith and the Sharia form, you know, this Sunnah. And women feminist scholars and feminist Islamic scholars are deeply studying and researching into the Hadith to show that these have been interpreted with men's lenses. And so that what, you know, what they say, it's not really what the Quran intended to say or what the Prophet Muhammad intended to say. You see, so it's very interesting. And they are really showing that, yeah, Islam, it's one of the, you know, religions that treat women and men with more equally with respect to others. But then the misinterpretation of Islam, you know, brought several issues on the table, like, you know, besides some that are, of course, I mean, all religions, let me say it, are patriarchal. I mean, all religions were born in context in which, you know, patriarchy was even stronger. And then because they are social facts, because they are social happenings, we need to be able to interpret them and to adapt them to our contemporary life.
Thank you very much, Carla. It's very interesting to hear that answer and the point that you're making, that in fact, when it comes to religion and Islam, it's basically more about how you instrumentalize religion rather than anything else. And in that sense, it applies to all religions. But for those interested in learning more about religion and how it can be instrumentalized, you'll want to listen to the fourth episode of this series, where we'll do a deep dive into the justice system of Morocco to understand the challenges women face when seeking justice and what religion really has to do with it. Thank you very much for this conversation, Carla. It was really a pleasure having you and discussing these issues with you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me again.
And next time you'll be with our Cecilia D'Alessandro to talk about the status of women in agri-food systems in Africa and to learn how to put women at the center of food systems change. Until next time, and thanks for listening.